5:27 last Monday afternoon, a helicopter borrowed from the state of Pennsylvania hovered for a moment over a house on Osage Avenue in Philadelphia. And a city policeman dropped a 2-pound satchel containing what the mayor calls a percussion device. Its purpose? To knock out a bunker on the rooftop, a bunker built by a radical cult with a history of violence. A fire was touched off that raged out of control and destroyed not only the target house, but 60 neighboring houses. The toll? 11 dead and 7 million in property damage. Following the raging fire, a raging controversy. The Philadelphia story, the big story this week. The neighborhood was evacuated before the bombing, so all the neighbors are accounted for, but homeless. The cast of characters responsible for the disaster includes a dropout from the third grade, Vincent Liephart. As head of the MOVE cult, he took on the name John Africa. His whereabouts this weekend is unknown. When he works, he's a handyman. Philadelphia city manager Leo Brooks helped mastermind the bombing. He served as a general in the Vietnam War. Mayor Wilson Good gave the go-ahead for the bombing, takes full responsibility. His childhood was spent on the farms of North Carolina, the son of sharecroppers. Armed with a master's degree from the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, he spent years in public service, rising to the job of managing director of the city of Philadelphia before winning election as the city's first black mayor nearly 2 years ago. His administration has won praise from every segment of the city's electorate, but this is his first major crisis.
Someone came to me and said, look, we're going to bomb this house. And I said, no. Well, what was said to me was that they were going to use an explosive device to blow the bunker off the top of the house.
The mayor said officials pleaded with the MOVE members to give up peaceably.
I had people who worked with me go to Dural Fort Africa to ask them to peacefully leave the house. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of last week. On Thursday, there was some encouragement and some hope that they would, in fact, leave the house. On Saturday, all that hope disappeared, and they told the people who went to him, and I quote, we're ready for you, come and get us.
WPVI Television in Philadelphia explored the background of MOVE.
MOVE was born here on Pelleton Avenue in the Pelleton Village section of West Philadelphia. Vegetarians who spurned technology, MOVE members described themselves as a back-to-nature group. The MOVE lifestyle was shaped by founder Vincent Liephart, a handyman who became known as John Africa. John Africa's first disciple was a 26-year-old white Brooklyn native named Donald Glassy. Glassy has been described as the co-founder of MOVE, but in a telephone interview yesterday, Glassy told me he prefers to be called MOVE's first member. Glassy, who spoke to me on the condition that I not record his voice or reveal details of his new family, job, and home, told me he left MOVE when he realized violence was inevitable. I was told of a meeting where a number of individuals severely beat one of the MOVE members who wasn't acquiescing to the way things were going. At that point, I decided I wanted nothing to do with them. Glassy told me yesterday even quitting MOVE was dangerous. Did they ever threaten you, I asked? Yes. Who? I'd really rather not say, because that individual is still running around loose somewhere, probably with an automatic weapon. Was it John Africa who threatened Donald Glassy's life? I asked Glassy, and he said no, not directly, adding that John Africa seldom did his own bidding, and then adding sarcastically, you never see John Africa at any of these MOVE shootouts.
A spokesman for the radical cult said Friday the bombing would be avenged.
For the second time in less than a week, Philadelphia police SWAT teams surrounded a house believed to be another headquarters for MOVE members. Police SWAT officers with automatic weapons could be seen moving around the house. And so far, there has been no confrontation. At the same time, there was a tour of the burned-out homes in West Philadelphia, where the confrontation was less than a week ago. The city of Philadelphia is hoping the federal government will declare this neighborhood a disaster area and make homeowners eligible for aid.
I intend to make available from my discretionary fund $1 million to help with the rehabilitation of the area that has been affected.
They'll be getting some aid. It will come in the order of some houses owned by HUD that they'll be able to move into throughout Philadelphia. Other people who don't have homes will be getting what is called rent stamps, something new from HUD that can be used in the private sector.
Many community leaders have been critical of Mayor Good's action in the bombing, but two public opinion polls show Philadelphians generally, by a margin of 2-1, still support their mayor. Still to come, how it all happened. So in Los Angeles, police were confronted with a siege situation similar to Philadelphia's. Remember when Patty Hearst was held hostage?
In May 1974, 500 Los Angeles policemen stormed the hideout of the Symbionese Liberation Army. In a furious gunfight that lasted 2 hours, thousands of bullets cut the tear gas-filled air. Eventually, the house caught fire and the SLA members inside were killed.
11 years later, the scene of the SLA hideout is a garbage-strewn abandoned lot. The neighbors well remember what happened here and don't mince their words when asked for an opinion on police use of force.
They come in like they're on a search and destroy mission. You know, they don't really be concerned about the people, you know, or their lives. You know, they're just concerned about getting them out, you know, dead or alive.
Lafayette McAdory's house still bears bullet holes from the SLA shootout across the street. He says dead men tell no tales and notes police tactics are always rougher in black neighborhoods.
Mexicans, black, they're gonna kill them. They have to travel, kill them.
Given the sensitivity of these kinds of issues, probably would move more slowly in a black community.
But Karen Palmer, who won an American Film Festival Award for her documentary on MOVE, the group involved in the Philadelphia attack, said there had to be another way to end the standoff.
I had no problem communicating with them. Just something could have been worked out in a peaceful way. It didn't have to result in violence.
A backward look now at the violent history of the MOVE people.
The first time most people in Philadelphia became aware of MOVE was in 1978. There was a 50-day blockade, and then another siege later in the year which ended in violence. A police officer was killed. Others were injured. Lawyer William Kunstler was approached by the group about legal representation after that siege ended.
Now they started in about 1972 with a student activist, I think his name is Classy. And with John Africa, and I think everyone, the idea was that everyone would take the name of Africa, which certainly means an affinity to Africa. They've always been small, and they've always been mainly in the Philadelphia area, as far as I know.
The violent confrontation between police and the members of MOVE followed years of awkward relations with neighbors. Local people said that members of the commune were dirty, and their many dogs were a health hazard.
Their profile became increasingly evident when, for instance, they set up bullhorns on their house and were broadcasting their thoughts to the neighborhood and at times obscenities. And
they were against technological advance, against science, almost like D.H. Lawrence's fear of what was happening in England through the Industrial Revolution. They're very strong about it, and they don't like modern conveniences. Don't like even mud toilets, for example.
This man who requested anonymity says he lived two doors away from the MOVE house, and he was their friend.
Well, that is a girl of peaceful people, you know. As I said, the whole thing started from the city wanting to interfere in their private life and their oath. And they wouldn't allow it, and so they started into a big war.
There are still many unanswered questions about MOVE. Among them, why did they choose Philadelphia for their headquarters? Police action which ended the siege may have done little to solve the mystery about this obscure group.
And we've been watching them for the past year, trying to establish a firm legal basis to really take action against them. It was only over the weekend that the district attorney here, through the court system, issued a series of warrants for their arrest. And it was this morning that the police commissioner went out, read their names over a loudspeaker, asked them to surrender. When they refused to do so, he then started to pour water into the house along with tear gas. That did not work. They returned fire. Thousands of rounds of fire was in fact returned against the police. The houses across the street are filled with bullet holes.
Philadelphia police surrounded MOVE headquarters late Sunday. MOVE has a tradition of bucking authority, and police were ready for trouble. They gave the group an ultimatum: give up and leave the fortified house or face the consequences. Group members refused to leave and warned the police against trying to evict them. Then before dawn, police ordered the fire department to hit the house with high-pressure water cannons. Police say those inside responded with automatic weapons fire. Police returned the gunfire and fired tear gas canisters into the home. The shooting lasted for 90 minutes. Almost all MOVE members believe in what they call a return to nature philosophy. They eat natural, often uncooked foods. They say they don't use electricity or modern technology. They refuse to deal with any form of bureaucracy. And they don't bathe and allow rats to live in their homes. For months, neighbors complained about the dirt and the smell and alleged they were harassed by MOVE members.
Throughout Sunday night and most of Monday, police failed to dislodge those inside.
Basically, the attempt was to begin to extricate a bunker at the top that was used all day long or all morning long to basically fire upon the police and other personnel in the area. Sometime in the afternoon, the police commissioner made a decision that he wanted to somehow remove that bunker and felt it could be done by having a state police helicopter go by and simply bomb that bunker away.
Did the police commissioner order that the bomb be dropped?
That's correct, yes.
Was that bomb, there are reports indicating that it was not only a percussion bomb, but indeed an incendiary device, which obviously would start a fire.
It was only intended to be a percussion bomb, and I don't think that it was intended to start a fire. My understanding from police and other personnel on the scene that the thing that really got the fire out of control was the fact they felt that the MOVE members had in fact poured gasoline on those roofs and also between the walls of those houses.
Do you consider dropping a bomb a rather drastic measure?
We do not think that that what was dropped was intended to be a bomb. It was meant only to, in fact, explode. And in fact, that's all happened. If you notice what happened, it in fact did explode and it in fact blew off the bunker. Nothing else happened with the house as a result of that dropping.
This is not child's play. This is a very, very serious matter. What we have out there is war. And I knew from the very beginning that once we made that decision to go in there, it would in fact be war because they intended to have a violent confrontation.
There were seven people went over there, negotiation team. He would allow them all the time that they needed to talk. Okay, when they walked out of there, they wasn't out of there 15 minutes when a chopper came by, state police chopper came by and dropped the fire bomb. That's why it's a fire. They did it, and that's awesome. Any way you look at it, it's awesome. All right, and murder.
Drop a fire bomb on people? Just to get seven people, you would think there were 17,000 in there. It's just a crying shame.
We felt that by removing the bunker, we could force the MOVE members out of the house and carry through and follow through on our plan. Protect life. The plan was a good one. It could have worked. The fire was accidental and was in fact unexpected. That does not, however, take away from the fact we had a good plan that could have resulted in no loss of life or property damage.
Some residents of the neighborhood defended the action.
Well, they asked him to do a job. He did it. They asked him to get the MOVE people out, and that's what he did. You know, sometimes you may ask for what you want, but you may not want what you get.
Well, I guess he did the best that he could do with his ability. He didn't have that much time to really decide on this ordeal that happened. Something that he had to act on right now.
I do not consider it a bad decision. I regret the loss of property. I regret any loss of life. But I have no qualms against what we did. It was, in my estimation, a sound tactical consideration. And we were prevented from adequately following through and protecting the neighborhood by the predetermined and premeditated actions of MOVE.
Damore said the house was the most heavily fortified he has ever seen. The inside was fortified with trees.
Mayor Good says he could not tolerate the neighborhood being held hostage by a small band of radicals. The mayor showed up at a Red Cross center to tell those who had been burned out that the city would replace their homes And like a phoenix, he says, the neighborhood will rise from the ashes.
Still to come, experts are hard on decision to bomb.
In a hostage situation, standard police procedure is to wait. It's to cajole, it's to pressure, it's to negotiate. We know that there were people on the scene, Urban Coalition, for example, who believed that there were genuine ways to negotiate settlement.
I didn't think they should have tried to evict him under the circumstances with that army of police went there, because they knew from 1978 and before that MOVE will react and will defend itself, and therefore another tactic, whether it was 5 months of negotiations, whether it was trying to bring in Jesse Jackson or 100 different possibilities, they took the worst possibility. Now they're trying to shift the blame totally to MOVE and to say there was MOVE that exterminated themselves by pouring gasoline on the roof, that they had explosives there. If the police commissioner thought they had explosives there, he never would have dropped a percussion bomb.
Have followed Mr. Kunstler's career over the years, and he has defended one radical group after another. I don't think that the police behaved in any way that indicated malice. I think they may have made some errors, but I think we have to attribute to them that they were trying to bring the situation under control with the most responsible methods that they knew how. Now, whether they used, in every case, the proper judgment is something else. The fact of the matter is we're trying to shift the blame here from the groups that precipitated this action, the MOVE organization. We've got groups like this all over the United States, be they the Ku Klux Klan on the far right or far left groups, and they represent a real threat to society. And I don't think that it's a responsible attitude to suggest that we should have a standoff for 5 months in that neighborhood and bring in Jesse Jackson and give these people a public forum.
I don't think that bomb would have been dropped in a white neighborhood, even though the police chief now says I would have dropped it anywhere in Philadelphia. I don't think it would have happened. And I think to shift away from this tragedy to a general discussion of the Ku Klux Klan or Half-Track somewhere else is a tragic mistake in itself. What happened in Philadelphia is an enormous tragedy. I represented Wilson Good in several of his lawsuits against former police commissioner and Mayor Rizzo. I know him. He's a good man and a good heart. I think he lost his head in this situation. And I think that we miss the whole implication of it, that a tiny group, this is a tiny group of people, maybe there were 15 or 20 there, maybe there are 10 in Chester, Pennsylvania, but it's a tiny group of people. And to compare them to the Ku Klux Klan, I think is so out of reach and makes this whole thing meaningless. They're just one of 100 different groups. What happened in Philadelphia is a cosmic tragedy. A black neighborhood, a black community was destroyed by, I think, not only carelessness, but an uncaring attitude toward black life.
The net result of this crisis point, aside from the tragedy of the destruction and loss of life, is that this has not harmed the MOVE movement, if in fact society or the police deem that the MOVE movement should be harmed and destroyed. But this hasn't harmed it. In fact, it's revitalized it.
The words from Langston Hughes, a raise in the sun, come to mind about it festering in the sun, and does it explode or does it just lie there? I think it's going to lie there, and we're going to have some problems this summer. I'm not predicting, I don't want to be guilty of a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I think there's a certain measure of civility that was shattered, with all due respect to the commissioner, by that bomb. I really think that was almost the seventh of an umbilical cord. The people seem to resent the bomb being dropped. They had no problem with assaulting, storming the house, firepower, tear gas. All those things didn't bother them, but the bomb somehow became a symbol of something that is inexplicable almost, that articulated or generated the anger.
It was directed against a radical group who chose the site of the confrontation, chose the method of the confrontation, were fortified to attack rather than solve anything by peaceable means. And during this confrontation, we further provided them with opportunities. And we had people talk to them, including relatives, prior MOVE members, religious members of the clergy, in an attempt to get them to come to reason and to surrender themselves peaceably. This is what we had hoped when we went there. This is was our hope during the negotiations. This is was our hope during the lulls and the confrontation. And unfortunately, they chose to do otherwise.
Let me say this to you.
If the MOVE compound had been anywhere else in the city, all other things taken into consideration and the same given set of circumstances, I would have done the same thing regardless of where it was.
But police officials in other cities disagree. The head of the American Federation of Police said the people I've talked to in law enforcement are flabbergasted by the dropping of that kind of bomb in a non-military situation.
I think that some other alternative should have been used.
Under no circumstances would I have done that, either as police chief or as mayor. It seems to me that the appropriate thing that could have been done and should have been done in Philadelphia was to lay siege to that building. And if it took days to starve them out, then, of course, that would be the route to follow.
And Mayor Ed Koch of New York said, if I had a police commissioner who was so stupid to allow a bomb to be thrown into a house, I would remove him. It may be difficult for outsiders to appreciate the long history of neighborhood harassment attributed to MOVE. More than 2 years ago, loudspeakers on top of the house blared curses and death threats late at night. The neighbors complained to police. They complained again when they saw men on the roof carrying guns, and again when truckloads of earth were hauled from the house. Were the MOVE people digging tunnels? Later, lead pipes and steel beams and tree trunks were carried into the house. Again, police and city officials were pressured to do something, but official restraint prevailed until last week. It was an unprecedented police action that raged out of control, touching off a wave of second-guessing. A percussion device with repercussions rattling City Hall and thoughtful law enforcement people everywhere. The Philadelphia story, the big story this week. This is Don Miller, CNN.